sure do appreciate again the opportunity you've given me to stand before you and just be with you. I've enjoyed getting to meet so many of you and getting to know you a little bit better and just spend time worshiping God with you. Things like that that are irreplaceable in this world, and I know my time has been well spent with you all here today, and I hope what I have to share with you tonight can be of some use for you. What we're going to talk about tonight is not going to be a whole lot different than what we talked about this morning. If you remember, we talked about how we should live as aliens, as people who have been cast out from this world because our home is in a different place. So what we're going to talk about tonight is when we're going through storms, and by storms, we're going to broaden that subject a little bit. So turn over to Psalms 46 quickly. That'll be where we will open tonight. In Psalms 46, in the first couple of verses, we got a description of four different types of weather events or tragedies and disasters, if you will. And what we want to do is I want to use those as a basis for talking about some storms that we'll go through in our lives. So starting there in verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present and help of trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved by it into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. There's a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High God. So like we said, there's four specific weather disaster-y events going on here. And what the writer says is, God is my refuge. And that literally means a high tower. God is somewhere that I'm going to rest in, I'm going to be protected in, if I go and stay within His borders, within His kingdom. And so using that as kind of a framework for what we're going to talk about tonight, I want you to think real quick just about storms that you go through in your life. Not just weather events, but you can use that as a reference. Think about like tornadoes and how they're earthquakes and tsunamis and all those stuff. Because if you think about storms, there's a lot of aspects that go into with storms. First off, not all storms are the same. That's obvious. Tornado is different than an earthquake. Not all storms are in the same magnitude. Not all are going to affect people the same. Not all people are going to take those same disasters in the same way. If you think about if New York City was hit with an earthquake versus some island on the Philippines or something, like there's just not that much civilization, so the impact is going to be a lot different. And that can be the same way with us too, with our personalities and whatnot. We can go through the same storm as somebody else, we're not taking it the same way. So these are just a few that I thought up off the top of my head. There's some aspects about when we go through storms. So I want you to think about those things and think about past storms that you've been through, things that involve pain, loss, deaths, disappointments, failures, any number of things that cause feelings of disappointment and heartache and loss and pain. Because that's what we want to talk about tonight. And we're going to look at three different people who had every reason to let all these bad things that happened to them give up on God and never ever want to go to anybody for help, much less Jesus. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And I want to start off by kind of looking at a negative aspect of what some people did when they went through bad storms. And this one, ironically enough, is actually a physical storm. But I think there's some spiritual storms or emotional storms involved in this as well. So turn over to Mark, the 4th chapter. We're going to spend all of our time in Mark, the end of Mark 4 and all of Mark 5. So we really won't be going too much farther than Mark 4 and 5. Turn to Mark 4, and we're going to pick up in verse 35. Very, very familiar story where the apostles are on the boat with Jesus, and a storm comes along. And we're going to read about their reactions and what Jesus said to them. So let's pick up there in verse 35. On that day when evening had come, he said to them, "Let's go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd, they took him on the boat just as he was. And the boats and their other boats were with them. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boats that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. Thought he was talking about Jesus. And when they woke him, they said to him, "Teacher, don't you care that we are perishing?" And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said to his apostles, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Just a few minor details, and this is really all I want to do. I want to point out a few things in all these sections of text that we're going to read that maybe help our understanding this a little bit better, and especially in this section here, even though it's probably the shortest section we'll read, there's a lot going on. If you think about it, this is very early on in Jesus' ministry, and so naturally, if you don't know someone that long, you're not going to have as much trust and faith in what they say, and you're probably easier to lose their trust than if you know someone a lot longer. And so when Jesus says, hey, let's get on the boat and we're going to go to the other side, they're probably in their head, okay, well, that's exactly what's going to happen. We're going to get on the boat with Jesus and we're going to go across the other side and there'll be no problem. They had every reason to believe that. But when that doesn't happen, you see what happens. Don't you care that we're perishing? I think for a lot of us, probably all of us, at some point or another, whether it's early on in our Christian life, whether it's in a weak moment of emotional toll or whatever, this has been us in one form or another. And I think probably all humanity in general. And I think their question, don't you care that we are perishing, really has two different questions involved. One of them is, does Jesus really care? I mean, does he? He sat there, got in a boat with them, went to sleep, and they were getting ready to die. More than likely die. The boat would have capsized if they wouldn't have woke him up. They would have died. Does he really care? Why would he let that happen to us? And the second question is, can he do anything about it? I know that it's easy to look at these stories, well, sure, he can do something about it. You know, he stilled the sea, and that was great and wonderful and everything. But I'm talking about your storms in your lives, my life. Ask yourself those two questions. And really put that to the test. Because that's an ever-critical question we have. Both of those questions are ones we have to ask ourselves. If we really want to follow Jesus in the way he would want us to follow him. Also, just like a side note, as I was studying through the whole book of Mark, and Nick and I have been studying through the book of John, it's interesting the details that different authors will have, especially with the Gospels. I mean, it's almost like they have their own kind of thing that they're trying to push in all the different Gospels. But especially in Mark, which Mark is said by most scholars to be like the first account ever written. And so it's kind of interesting to think about from the perspective, like, this is a first look into Jesus' ministry and his life and his miracles and all the things that he did in his early ministry. And two, there's a lot of details that aren't included in some of the other Gospels. For example, and if you do any bit of evangelistic talking with people, ask people questions, people come ask you questions about different things, especially people who are atheists or don't believe in God in general, will say, just like, tales like this are just legends. Like, this is a great story, you know, it didn't really happen. Just kind of like a factual thing. If you look at this passage in particular and notice all the small, like, minuscule, irrelevant details that are thrown in, it just kind of makes you wonder, like, this is really a historical account. Like, only people who were there would know that that's the case. Like, they took him just as he was. Well, I mean, why is that relevant? Of course, you know, he's just going to go on the boat however he was beforehand. But they throw that in there, and also there are other boats with them. Only people who were there would have known that. So it's important to point these things out to people as they're challenging Jesus' miracles and stuff like that. The point, it's not legend. I mean, these are actual things that are happening. And plus, like, whenever Jesus, like, stops the storm, it's not like some great and powerful, miraculous magic trick that's going on. It's, like, really, really simple. It's almost, like, dumbed down. It's like, okay, be still, hush, see. And it just stops and just calms and everything. So, like, that's not, like, that masterful. I mean, if I was going to come up with, like, calming the sea, man, I'd come up with something crazy. Like, come up with some magic trick and get all, I don't know, I just come up with something crazy. But it's so simple, because that's all that Jesus had to do was say it, and it happened. So it's important to point those things out, and in our lives, and as we're talking to people and people are asking questions, we've got to point these things out, because they're important, whether or not we look at them very in-depth or not. But anyway, so that's the two questions we're going to ask ourselves. And the next three people we're going to read about, more than likely, ask that question to themselves. They had every reason to ask that question to themselves. So, keep that in your mind. Does Jesus care? One. And can he do anything about it? So let's keep reading. We're going to move on to Mark 5. And we're going to read, this is a larger section of text, but we're going to read the first 20 verses. Another pretty common passage a lot of people know, talking about Legion. I'll point out some different facts and different things that stuck out to me. And also the thing that I think runs through the 5th chapter and on to the 6th chapter and 7th chapter as well is that Mark is writing these things, and it proves the power and love that Jesus has for people. I know a lot of people just want to say, well, yeah, Jesus had power, like that's the obvious one. But the love, well, yeah, you know, generic, Jesus loves everybody. That's what we always say. But you'll really, really get to see some of Jesus' personality in chapter 5. It's pretty remarkable how much he loved people and the things that he did for people. So let's dig into the text here. Chapter 5, verse 1. They came to the other side of the sea. By the way, just like Jesus said, they were going to go to the other side. They went to the other side. But they just let this emotional response to this life event change the way they saw it. But they still did it. They did exactly what Jesus said. They were going to the other side. They made it to the other side. But like we tend to do, we let emotional responses, particularly in this case, they let fear overcome their faith. And that's one of those other themes that was in that chapter 2, 3, and 4, really, is not letting fear overcome your faith. Let's keep reading. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart and broke the shackles into pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. I'm going to stop right there. I don't know how many of you guys are into zombies, Walking Dead, any of that stuff. If there's ever a zombie scene in the Bible, this is it. This just seems nuts. I don't understand. I don't really comprehend all of what Jesus does and why he does it. But this is just remarkable what he does. This guy is not clothed. We find out in Luke, this guy doesn't have any clothes. This guy's naked. Okay. Coming out of the tombs, he finds out that he's always screaming at night. His family and friends have chained him up, and it's got to the point where this demon has got so much power over him, or it's consumed him to the point where he's living in the tombs, living with dead people, and nobody can chain him up, so he's just living out, and he cuts himself. If you really can think about, even with drugs and people actually cutting themselves today, I think the principle of this idea is really why they do that. They just want to find a way to release their frustrations, release these storms that they're going through. And so our goal for these people, for all people, is to be there when they're going through these storms. All right, so let's keep reading. That's enough of me commenting and interrupting. Verse 7, and crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you have to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter into them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs. And the herd, numbered about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. We're going to pause right there for just a minute. Have you ever gotten a point in your life where you were so consumed by things that you were going through, all the different aspects of storms in your life, where you lost your sense of identity? I think for a lot of us, at one point or another in our lives, we've probably been there. If not, I'm sure we know people who have been there. They get so consumed, whether it's sins or whether it's trials, it's an overwhelming amount of stress or whatever the case may be, that you get so consumed by those things that you lose your identity. This is what's happening to Legion here. And I'm not entirely sure if it's just one demon or if it's 2,000. I'm assuming I lean more towards the 2,000 just because his name is Legion, which means we are many. It's like an armament of soldiers, like a whole army almost. Which also there are 2,000 pigs, so that kind of you can put two and two together. He doesn't know who he is anymore. When Jesus asked him what his name, and what I think he's trying to get at there is he's trying to get to know this man. That's just compassion. That's love. He's not just going from hillside to hillside, crowd to crowd, country to country, just healing people just to show his power and be on with it. He wants to know the people he's healing. And he wants them to know him too. So whenever we talk about Legion and losing your identity, we've got to realize first and foremost that we're here. And our identity is a soldier of Christ, someone who's fighting for God, someone who is made in the image of God, because Jesus wants to help us and he wants to find us. And I think that's exactly what he's doing when he asks for Legion's name. Just in that simple statement, he's showing compassion, he's showing love. Also, just a side note about the pigs, I'm not sure exactly what they mean. I've read lots of different stuff on that, and I tend to think, I mean, the pigs probably shouldn't have been there anyway because that would have been considered unclean for this for the Jewish people and stuff. And so pigs probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. And so it's just kind of symbolic that they fall down the cliff and all die, all 2,000 of them. That's kind of ironic, I think. But anyways, I'm not sure if there's any meat there or not. I mean, you probably know more than I do on that. But anyways, so this is the scene that we walk up on. One of the first real images of Jesus like interacting with somebody and talking to them and getting to know them and trying to help them with their problem. The naked guy in the tombs, who his family has written him off, his friends have left him for dead, and he just had no identity. I don't know, but if I was going to choose someone to heal and get him to follow me, that would probably not be it. I would probably not pick the craziest guy on the block. But that's exactly who Jesus calls. That's exactly who Jesus goes to and chooses to ask to follow him. So we'll keep reading. Verse 14. The herdsmen fled and told in the city and in the country, and the people came to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there clothed in his right mind, they were afraid. And those who had seen it described them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. They began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. They didn't like that. This pigs was probably their livelihood. Farming, this was their whole livelihood. Like 2,000 pigs, I mean, I'm sure that's worth a fair amount of money today, but back then that would have been worth a whole lot of money. Oh, and so they're probably mad at Jesus for doing this. They just killed all their livestock. Like, why would you do that? That's mean. But anyways, so continuing. And he was getting to the boat, and the man who had been possessed by the demon begged him that he might be with them. And he did not permit them, but he said to him, "Go home and tell your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has great mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled. Again, you have an example of Jesus doing something that's only Jesus would do. He just heals this man miraculously. Everybody knows the people are coming from everywhere to see this man who was sleeping with dead people, who was chained up by his friends, who no one could chain him down, had a bunch of demons, didn't know who he was, been left for dead. Surely Jesus, after healing this man, he's in his right mind. By the way, if you notice, he has clothes on now. And I don't have any evidence to show that Jesus was the one who gave him clothes. But, I mean, Jesus was there, and obviously I can assume that he probably gave him some clothes, or he commanded one of his disciples to give him clothes. That's compassion. Like, who thinks about that? Who thinks about giving a demon-possessed man clothes after he's been healed in his right mind? That's just remarkable, the compassion and love and care that Jesus has for people in this text. But you would think that he would let Legion go with him. But yet again, here's another example of how Jesus loves people. He tells them to go to his friends and his family, the same ones who chained him up, the same ones who let him go, same ones who didn't care if he was gone, probably assumed that he was dead by now. Go to them and tell them how much the Lord has done for you. That's remarkable. That's Jesus for you. In a nutshell, if you want one story to define who Jesus is, this is a really good story to define who Jesus is, to show his personality and his care and love for everybody. I think it's just remarkable, the love he has for everyone. And this isn't the only example we're going to see. We're going to see two other examples of Jesus just doing unthinkable things for people. By the way, who is all-powerful. That just blows my mind, that someone who has all the power, like, he doesn't have time to deal with this, you know, long drain out with people. Which Jesus was still here when these people came. So, you know, Jesus had hung around for some amount of time. I don't know if it was a day, I don't know if it was a week, I don't know how much time had passed. But Jesus was still there when people came around to see this man, Legion. Anyways, that's enough about Legion. I mean, it's just a remarkable story, and I think it deserves to be studied pretty well in depth. The next story, and we're just going to kind of go with Jairus and Jairus' daughter. We're going to skip around and jump over the woman who had the flow of blood. So we're going to read 21 through 24, and then we're going to skip to the end of the chapter where Jesus actually raises his daughter. So start in verse 21. When Jesus had crossed again into the boat to the other side, again, exactly what he said they were going to do before, but they just didn't. They let their fear and emotions get in the way. A great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. And one of the rulers of the synagogue came out, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, so she would be made well and live." And he went with her. And then skipping over to verse 35. While he was still speaking, which he was in a crowd, and he was talking to the woman who had the flow of blood. While he was still speaking, there came a messenger from the ruler's house who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they had said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." Another example of fear over faith, or faith over fear in this case. And he allowed no one except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when they had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with them and went to where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumai," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. Well, if you haven't figured out by now, Jesus is a pretty busy guy. Everywhere he goes now, great numbers of crowds are coming and crowding him. And this is actually where the story picks up. So a man comes up to Jesus, Jairus. He's like, my daughter is about to die. Like, please come. And Jesus says, come. By the way, Jesus had all these crowds. And we see right after this, he had this great crowd. And he was trying to get through the crowd. And he was just healing people. And people were just touching him. And he don't know who's touching him. And all this stuff. So the fact that Jesus would make time just to come heal this one little girl, again, shows his compassion and love he has for people, especially if they're willing to come to him. And I think that's really important for us to learn. That when we're going through these things, we've got to learn to get on our knees and go to him. And that can mean a lot of different things. Prayer, that's obviously going to be a big one. We're going through things, we've got to pray. We've got to approach God and make sure our will is aligned with his will. And make sure we're willing to accept his will. If it's his will, it's different than our will when we're going through these storms. Because our will might be, well, hey, God, just please get this storm past me. Don't let me endure this any longer. But you know, God's will might be, you know what? You need to wait this storm out. You need to finish the course of this storm so you can learn a lesson of it. So I think that's ever important for us to remember when we see stories like this. So Jesus goes to the crowd with a sexually skip, but he goes to the crowd, and this is when the woman with the flow of blood touches him. And so he's getting credit. He's getting touched. His apostles are like, well, how are you supposed to know who touched you? I mean, we're surrounded by people. Everybody's touching you. And at the same time, one of the messengers come and tells them, like, don't bother Jesus anymore because your daughter died. I'm going to stop. If anybody had a reason to just go ahead and give up, well, Jesus, you done me in. You let me down. I'm done with you. Jairus had a pretty good right to do that. He had pretty good reasoning to do that, too. But then Jesus looks at him and says, you know, don't worry. Just believe in me. And then we go down and we see, you know, people are just completely distraught and crying and weeping and wailing. And he tells them, you know, don't worry. I'm here and I can do something about it. So those two questions we talked about, does he care? I think he's proven it already. Just by the fact that he said to Jairus, you know what, I'll go with you. I'm crowded by people, but I'm still going to go heal your daughter because you came to me. That's love. He cares, absolutely. Does he have the power to do it? Well, we found out, didn't we? He takes the girl by the hand. Again, if you're going to raise a girl from the dead, like have a big ritual, like go to the middle of town and have this big hoopla and make sure everybody's seeing it, which, by the way, he only took a very select few of people, compassion and love. Never been a dead person. But I can only assume, like, when I'm asleep on the couch, and Katie and Nick are, like, coming in the crowd, and a bunch of people come in, like, I'm, like, bonkers. Like, I'm out of sorts. I don't know what to do. I'm dazed. I'm angry. I'm confused. Jesus was looking out for Jairus' daughter because he didn't allow a lot of people in that room with her. That's love. That's compassion. That's care for somebody. To think ahead far enough, like, you know what, whenever she runs, she may be a little confused. I mean, she's been dead. I don't know what it's like being dead, but I mean, you can only assume she's probably going to be confused when she wakes up. Jesus had enough care to think about that. And to set aside a provision, make sure that that was going to be taken care of for her. Other things that show is, he only took a few apostles with him. And also, after she rises up, he says it again, like with Legion, he kind of does something a little weird. He's like, don't tell anybody that I just raised your daughter from the dead. That kind of had me stumped for a while. Like, I was like, that just doesn't make any sense. Like, he told Legion, like, Legion was a crazy guy. I mean, he had demons, and he was cutting himself, and he was sleeping with that. Like, he told him to go to see his friends and family and tell everybody he knew about it, and he went and proclaimed it to all these people. Like, something like raising someone from the dead. Like, why would you not go tell people about that? Like, why not? I don't know why, but I know when we read in John, there were some miracles that he did that he didn't want people to tell about because it wasn't his time yet. And so that may be the case here. Maybe he was just looking out for their family again. They go around telling everybody, well, Jesus raised up this star from the dead. If you knew he was dead, come look. And just swarm the family with all these crowds and crowds of people. So it may have been that. And even if it was, I mean, that shows how Jesus was looking out for the family and the daughter again. And also, the very last verse, it just, like, you didn't have no proof that Jesus cared and loved people. Like, go give her something to eat. Like, really? Like, that's what's on your mind? Like, make sure he has something to eat? No doubt she had been sick for a while. She was at the point of death. Her family was probably so jubilant that they probably wouldn't think about that for hours and hours, maybe even days. Like, we're just so happy she's alive. Jesus is like, make sure you feed her. Don't just get over jubilant and just forget about her health. Like, make sure she has something to eat. You don't think Jesus cares about you? He absolutely does. He absolutely did with Jairus' daughter, Jairus and Legion, and even his apostles. Even when they failed him, he still went through and calmed that storm. Absolutely, he cares. And the last story we're going to read about, verse 35, twenty-five through 34. That's right. The woman with the flow of blood. And then we'll make a few other comments, and the lesson will be yours. Starting there in verse 25, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all she had was no better, but she grew worse. And she had heard reports of Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she said, if I touch even his garment, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power had gone out from him, immediately turned around the crowd and said, who touched my garment? And the disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, and you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it, but the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Obviously, this is a text we see with people just pressing around, and Jesus is no doubt getting touched by everybody and all the disciples, and everybody just bumping against him. You can only imagine, like, I think of like a big concert where there's just a bunch of people and you're just trying to weave your way through. Like, you don't know who's bumping into you and who's not. Everybody's bumping into you for all you know. What Jesus does here is pretty remarkable. In the midst of this crowd being bumped by all these people, when he knows power's gone, he wants to know who he healed. He wants to know exactly who he healed. That's care. That's compassion. That's love. He just didn't want to heal people like we already said. He wanted to get to know who he was going to heal. Or he wanted to understand them. He wanted to know them. He wanted to care for them. That's deep compassion. That shows you that Jesus just wasn't around trying to get followers. He just wasn't trying to prove he had power. He's going to leave this earth. He was looking for true disciples. He was looking for people who were come to him in faith and listen to his teaching and change their lives for him. That's pretty much what the first three or four chapters of Mark is about. Like, Jesus was coming to change everything up, make radical changes to the whole world. That's what he had come to do. And you see that here. I can only imagine, like, some of the Pharisees and Sadducees, as they heard about these things, were like, well, man, he's just trying to one-up us. We're healing people, and we're doing all these great works, casting out demons, prophesying in his name. And he's just trying to one-up us by, doing all these extra things. He wasn't just doing extra things. He was doing absolutely necessary things for what he was trying to establish in his disciples and in his crowds and all these people he was doing these things for. Just a few other, this idea of identity. He just wanted to know these people. Just like he asked Legion his name, and she wanted to know who exactly had touched his garment and when power had gone out of him. And notice that he didn't say, the fact that you touched my garment is what healed you. Her faith is what made her well. And that's remarkable. Or is your faith like that? Is my faith like that? It's pretty remarkable to think about, because she had only heard about these things. She hadn't witnessed them herself. She had heard from crowds and other people that, oh, this Jesus guy, he may have a shot at healing you. Because she had every reason to give up. She spent her entire life, money, and on doctors, the physicians, and possible cures, and it only made her worse. So she had every reason to give up. She had every reason to say, you know what, I'm never going to be healed. I'm just going to die in my own, and, you know, curse God and die. Talk about Job's wife. Just curse God and die. Nothing can help me anymore. She just heard about Jesus. It's like, man, I got to go find him, and I got to go be with him, because he can make me better. When we're going through storms, that's got to be us. We've got to be those people that say, you know what, I'm going through these things, and it's hard, but I'm going to fall at the feet of Jesus, just at the sound of his name. That's how willing we should be to go to him when we need help. And so that concludes some of the thoughts we're going to have from Mark. And in closing, I really want to look at just a few things Paul has to say in 2 Corinthians. So turn over to 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter. And if you remember this passage, this is where Paul is really recounting a lot of things he had suffered through. And, I mean, if anyone had a reason to you know what, God, it's not worth it. I'm just, you know, I think how many times he was beaten and shipwrecked and cast away from people and just ridiculed and mocked and put in prison. Like, Paul endured a whole lot. He had every reason, and right, probably, to be like, you know what, God, I've just done too much for you. It's not worth it anymore. This storm that I've endured, all these storms I've gone through in my life, that's just too much. I'm done. I want you to notice what he says. In particular, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 16. This is the recounting of his and some of the things he suffered. Just a few things. I repeat, let no one think me a foolish, but even if you do, accept me as a fool, so that what little I do, may I boast a little. What I am saying with this boastful confidence, I say not as the Lord would, but as a fool. Since many boast according to the flesh, I too will boast. For you gladly bear with fools, being wise yourselves. For you bear if someone makes slaves of you, or devours you, takes advantage of you, or puts on airs, or strikes you in the face. To my shame, I must say, we were too weak for that. But whatever anyone else dares boast of, I am speaking that as a fool. I also dare to boast of that. And he goes on and talks about what it kind of means, a servant of Christ. Paul's pretty much saying, you know, I have a good reason, probably, in the fleshly speaking, to boast about all the things I did and all the things I suffered. Like, man, I came out of that, and man, I am really tough for coming through all those things. He calls himself a fool. I shouldn't even be thinking about boasting about those things, because none of those things came from me. None of those things were about me. All those things were about bringing glory to God. That was his mission. And by the way, Paul's mission, his set-aside role as an evangelist, was going to people who weren't even considered righteous people. They're the Gentile. Like, these people were like worshiping gods, and they just hated the Jews, hated religion. Like, they just didn't want any part of Jews or the Jewish religion or Mosaic law or nothing. They didn't want any part of that. That's exactly who Paul went to. And he's still not willing to take any credit. Like, why should I even think about boasting? Because this is what Jesus has done. And then in chapter 12, the first 10 verses, and we'll close on these thoughts. And in particular, this is where Paul is considering his thorn in the flesh. Thorn of the flesh, take that as a storm. Think about storms that you may go through, you have gone through. Thorn in the flesh storms, you know, kind of the same idea to me. In verse 1, I must go on boasting, though there's nothing to be gained by it. I will go on to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to a third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know this man was caught up into paradise, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And he heard these things that cannot be told, which man may not utter. On behalf of this man, I will boast, but on my own behalf, I will not boast, except of my weakness. Now listen, I will not boast except of my weakness. Verse 6, though if I should wish to boast, I would be a fool, for I would refrain from, for I would be speaking the truth, but I refrain from it, so that no one may think more of me than he sees in me or hears from me. So to keep myself from being conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given to me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me, but he said, my grace is sufficient for you, and my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. That's powerful. If anybody had a reason to boast, to be conceited, Paul had a good reason to. He endured a whole lot, and he made it on the other, and he converted hundreds of people. He had made such a giant change himself. Like, man, I did such a great job changing from killing people to proclaiming the gospel. Man, I just did such a great job. The only thing Paul said he was worthy of boasting in was not his strengths, his weaknesses. Is that me? Is that you? Now, I don't think the point of this is just let everyone know, like, hey, I am terrible at encouraging people, so don't even come to me for encouragement, so don't even think about coming to me for advice. Like, I'm terrible with the scriptures. I don't think that's what he's not getting at that. What he's getting at, I think, though, is that we have to realize and accept the fact that we are weak, and we have to have God's help. Second thing, God's power is perfected in our weakness. Because when we are weak, that's when He makes us strong. And I think this is kind of concept goes along with like confessions. It's not so much about just admitting that I'm weak, or letting it be known, like, hey guys, I think I'm weak. It's the fact that you're willing to admit that you need help. I think that's a big part about a lot of things that we're commanded to do. Is rooted just being willing to admit that you can't do it all on your own. You have to have God. You have to have help. Whether it comes by Scripture, whether it comes by your church family, whether it comes by your brothers and sisters who grow up. However it comes, you've got to realize that you've got to have help from God. When we fully rely on God, just as Paul did, and we understand that when we go in the midst of storms, not can he, not does he have the ability to, but when we're going through these storms, he will deliver us if we go to him. Big if. Just like Jairus, just like Legion even fell down at his feet. We've got to be willing to fall down at his feet, take help from God, realize that we need help from God, because his grace is enough. His power is all surpassing. You going through storms? Have you gone through storms and haven't handled them the right way? I think there are a lot of applications we can take away from some of these things. And I hope as we've studied these things that you realize that you have to go to God when we're going through storms of all different types, and that there will be different types of storms in your life. And that's what God is there for. If we're willing to fall down on our knees at His feet and obey Him and go to Him for help. So if you need to do that today, if you need to come to God, if you've never obeyed the gospel, if you're struggling with storm right now, or if you've struggled with, you haven't handled storms right in the past, if you need to fix anything, it's never too early to go to God for help. If we can help you respond in any way or encourage you in any way, please let it be known as we stand and we sing this song for encouragement.